You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. And we've just reached the conclusion of the first day of the NBA playoffs. And I mentioned that I wanted to do a lot more podcasts throughout the playoffs. So here we are, one day in, and we're going to do a podcast dedicated to the first day of the playoffs. And we're going to begin, obviously, with the Blazers and Pelicans who just finished up playing. Quite a few things to take from that game. Obviously, a huge career-defining, up until this point at least, performance from Anthony Davis, who had 35 points, 15 rebounds, 4 blocks and 2 steals. But Drew Holiday deserves a lot of credit. Down the stretch, he was massive with 3 huge defensive plays. There was the stop that he got on the fast break. I think that was on McCollum. And then he got a defensive stop on Lillard in the final minute. And then, of course, the final block, which I don't know what Portland was doing. There was about 8 seconds left. They had no timeouts left. Inbounding from the baseline, which I know is difficult. But they looked to get they looked to go to the basket, but they were down by 3. Which resulted in nothing anyway. So to me, that's almost like a turnover. And I don't want to sound like I'm Monday morning quarterbacking this, but that play doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And that was bad coaching, in my opinion. You have to go for the 3 there. And I know the Pelicans take it away, but I guess you've just got to put 5 guys in there and run some screens and force them to switch. And even if you have to take a contested 3, which isn't ideal, at least you've got a shot at tying it. Because what happened there is once that shot was blocked, the Pelicans got it with about 4 seconds left. So let's assume that he actually makes that layup. It's probably 5.5 seconds on the clock. I don't remember if the Pelicans have a timeout left, so I guess if you're going to go for the steal, then I guess you're going to play your chances there. But let's assume that the Pelicans had a timeout. They advance it. They get fouled. Even if they miss both foul shots. So that's another second or half a second off the clock in getting the foul called in the first place. If they miss both of them, you can't inbound the ball. So the ball is live from the moment, assuming you get the rebound as well, right? The moment you get the rebound, you got to go the length of the court in 4 seconds. And what do you think the Pelicans are going to do? Of course, they're going to be contesting the shot. So you're wound up with a contested shot from about half court or maybe even longer to try and tie the game, or to win the game at that stage, right? Because they would only be down by 1, and we're assuming that they missed both foul shots. Just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Another thing that Portland's going to have to really look at is they love running the pick and roll. The Blazers love running pick and roll or high screens for their guards, and that opens up or gives them favorable matchups, at least, with bigs, with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That they can't do that against this team. Because Anthony Davis is actually, and this is not a slight on Drew Holiday, who's, as I mentioned before, played really good defense. He's played really good defense all year long. But Anthony Davis, despite being a big man, is actually a better defender on the perimeter than their guards. And that was a big reason why McCollum and Lillard struggled big time in the first half. Because they were getting that switch they wanted, but they just couldn't do anything with it. If anything, Davis was able to pressure him a lot more and contest it a lot more because of his ability to block shots. What went through my mind when I was watching that is they need to make an adjustment similar to what they made up against the Clippers when they knocked the Clippers out a few years ago. And what they did was they had Mason Plumlee, who was on their team. They had him slip the screen and then he would be wide open because the ball handler, the guard, as well as DeAndre Jordan, would stay at home with Damian Lillard or McCollum. And that opened up things for Plumlee, and he would either get all the way to the basket for an uncontested dunk, or he'd pass it to the corners, and they would get wide-open threes. It was a big reason why they won that series. Obviously, it wasn't the biggest reason. The biggest reason was Blake Griffin and Chris Paul getting injured almost simultaneously in Game 4. But that's one thing I would like to see them do, that being the Blazers, for them to have Nurkic or Ed Davis just slip that screen entirely and then get into the teeth of the defense. And Nurkic is a lot more, he's not as good of an athlete as what Mason Plumlee was back then, or still is now even, but he's a lot more skilled in terms of his passing and shooting. So he doesn't even have to get to the front of the rim to finish. He could shoot an 8-footer, a 10-footer, a 15-footer. And that's a problem that the Pelicans will have to figure out. And the other thing I'd like to see them do is actually start Ed Davis. Ed Davis was huge for them. He had 13 rebounds in only 20 minutes of play, and 5 of them were offensive. Now, I know that the Blazers were missing a lot of shots, so that's a little bit inflated, but I would like to see them start him ahead of Evan Turner and have Evan Turner come in. Evan Turner played good, but Evan Turner should come off the bench and have the green light, because he only had 30 minutes, but have the green light in terms of just being able to shoot the basketball and lead that second unit. And I think from a matchup standpoint, you have Davis and you have Nurkic, and that way, whoever, you can still attack Mirotić with a big, rather than attacking him with Al-Farouq or Evan Turner, because Mirotić has never been a quote-unquote big player. He's tall, he's like 6'10", 6'11", he's a big body, but he never really plays physical. Let's see him try to box out an Ed Davis as opposed to an Evan Turner, or a Nurkic instead of Ed Turner, whoever Anthony Davis is not guarding. And I think that's an advantage that Portland should look into. The other thing I wanted to point out is, towards the end of the game, the broadcaster was talking about how this is the first game that Anthony Davis has won, first playoff game that Anthony Davis has won. And that's true, it is the first playoff game that he's won, but let's apply a little bit of context. This is only his second appearance in the playoffs. And, his first was up against the 2015 Golden State Warriors, who obviously went on to win the title. They won 67 games that year as well, if memory serves me correct. So it's not like he's been swept multiple times. This is a groundbreaking. This is only the second time he's been to the playoffs. So, I mean, they have a stat for everything, right? And I guess this was the one stat that they were waiting to throw it at Anthony Davis. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was Lillard and McCollum were, and I mentioned this earlier, but they were 12 of 39 from the field, and they were much worse in the first half. But they nearly won. And I know a lot of those misses led to offensive rebounds, which allowed them to claw back into the game. And McCollum really did pick it up. I wouldn't say he caught fire, but he resumed his regular rhythm that we're used to in the second half and the fourth quarter. But keep in mind, they very nearly won despite that performance. Now, I'm not trying to say, I don't want people to think that I hope Portland wins. But if I'm Portland, obviously you want to win game one at home. But you're probably not that discouraged either by it, that it took Anthony Davis with a huge performance. As I said, a defining game of his career so far, along with maybe the worst combined game for McCollum and Lillard together, at least since they started, at least that I can remember, and this includes regular season, for them to lose at home to this team. So if I'm Portland, there's no reason to really be panicking at this stage. They do have to play with a lot of desperation, similar to what they played with in the fourth quarter. They do have to make some adjustments, but I think they'll be fine. I think this will be a long series. I may be teetering a little bit and leading more towards New Orleans coming out of this as in winning the series. But I'm excited to watch this series. This is a great chess match. And this is why playoff basketball is by far and away the most exciting time of the year, at least for me as a basketball fan. We're now going to scoot across to the Raptors and Washington series. And normally when a number one seed struggles with a number eight seed at home, especially in the East, so think back to the Pacers when they struggled against Atlanta, or Atlanta when they were a 60-win team, they had four All-Stars and they struggled with the Brooklyn Nets led by the immortal Deron Williams. That's usually a big cause for concern, because even if they make it to the conference finals, or in this case, the conference semifinals, and they'll be facing LeBron, even if they're able to somehow get through that, how are they going to bang with the big boys from the Western Conference? There's little to no hope in those situations. But I'm going to throw out that rationale this time, because Washington is not a typical 8 seed in the East. You look at their talent, you look at and it's not just talent, they're also veterans. This team is more than capable of making the Eastern Conference final. If you were to have told me before the season started that the Wizards and the Raptors would be playing in the first round, and one team would be the one seed and the other team would be the eight seed, I definitely would have thought it would have been the Wizards being the one seed. Now, I'm not going to say that I predicted the Wizards to be the number one seed in the East, but if it was going to be out of those two, I would have gone with the Wizards. Just like if you had told me before game one that it would have been a close game throughout the first half and the first three quarters, or the first three and a half quarters, actually, and it would have been the Wizards that choked instead of the Raptors, I would have thought, no way, there's no chance of that. But that's exactly what happened. And Toronto's bench got them out of trouble. Now, can they consistently do that in the playoffs? Can their bench get them out of trouble? And as I said before, Washington is a veteran team. They do not want to go down 2-0 heading back to DC. So Toronto has to view the next game, even though it's not. They have to view the next game as a must win and go straight for the kill. If they can consolidate and go up 2-0, all the pressure goes back on Washington to just hold, serve, and extend the series. Now, I think the Raptors are definitely good enough to at least win one in Washington, regardless of whether it's 1-1 or 2-0. So if they go up 2-1 and they're able to win at least one in Washington, obviously they win two, the series is over, but win one in Washington, that's a short series. And that's exactly what they need. They need some momentum for themselves, because a lot of these guys, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, that the DeMar DeRozans, the Kyle Lowrys, the Dwayne Caseys, these guys, they need to build up a little bit of self-belief in themselves that they can knock off LeBron and the Cavs in the next round. They can advance to the finals. And they need to build up that self-belief and that confidence, not with the regular season, but with an emphatic sweep over a very talented and veteran Washington Wizards team. And the way you do that is, one, survive and beat them, but two, also by turning it into a short series. Which is exactly what it looks like we might be getting in the other playoff series in the East between Philly and Miami. And I don't want it to sound like I'm overreacting, but anytime you get blown out in the playoffs by a younger team and they don't have arguably their best player in Embiid, that's an ominous sign that it could be a very short series. And once again, I don't want to sound like I'm overreacting, but I don't think the Miami Heat can match the pace the 76ers brought on the both ends of the court. And if the 76ers can bring that pace every single game, forget just being contenders in the East, they could win the whole thing. There's that energy level that they had and that movement they had offensively and defensively. And this really came from a gut check moment when they were trailing at halftime. Now, I'm going to be completely honest with you. When I say that they could win the title, as if they maintain what they did in the second half, I don't think they're going to maintain it consistently. We're getting glimpses of it. I don't think they'll win the title this year. But we're getting glimpses of something very special happening in Philly. If they're able to, as I said, if they're able to play at that kind of speed and intensity for that, if they're able to sustain that, there's not a whole lot of teams in the league, not just the Eastern Conference, but in the league that can match that. Even Houston, even Golden State, they've got to be concerned if they see them bringing this night in, night out against some of the better teams in the league. And I would put Miami up there, not in obviously the top echelon. They're a lower seed in the Eastern Conference, but they're not a bad team. They're not a joke of a team like the New York Knicks or the Brooklyn Nets or the Phoenix Suns or any garbage team that you want to put up there. They did that against a pretty competent and well-coached and intelligent team. And they had no answer for that. Now, the other side of the coin to that argument is it's just one game. It was really just one half, because they were playing okay in the first half, but not great. They played fantastic in the second half. But it's just one game. And if you're Miami, you don't panic. Because, I don't want to quote Mike Tyson, but at the same time, what he said is really resonating with this topic right now. And it's, everyone's got a plan until they've been punched in the face. And Philly is yet to be punched in the face yet, from a basketball standpoint. I don't mean get Ron Artest or Meta World Peace out there, but you've got to look at it from the standpoint. Let's see what happens when Philly is forced to counter. And Miami might not be able to do it, and even Milwaukee or Boston might not be able to do it. But I guarantee you either the Raptors or the Cavs will be able to do it, and definitely a team in the finals will be able to do it. And despite what I said about Miami not having to panic, they have to be concerned. And the obvious element that they've got to be concerned with is the depth that the Sixers have. You got Ben Simmons, you got Saric, you got Bellinelli, Ilyasova, Embiid, obviously, Covington, Redick, Fultz. And the question is, can Miami slow any of these guys down let alone half of them. And I've got to lean towards no. I pick this to be a long series, and I think Miami can win a game, but realistically, that might be the best that they can possibly hope for at this stage, unless they can slow this pace down. And unless, Philly trips over themselves here. Because I think the only team that can really slow down Philly, in the East at least, is Philadelphia themselves. And the last game that I wanted to talk about, I didn't even really want to talk about it because I fell asleep during time zones, man. It was the Warriors and Spurs. And I watched the first quarter, fell asleep, then watched the last quarter, woke up. It was 5 in the morning. And the notes that I've got was, even without Curry, this is a monster mismatch. And it really does feel like last year's conference finals without Kawhi Leonard. I mean, if you're the Spurs, you've got LaMarcus Aldridge and not much else. You've got a couple of young players that they've been able to get some experience for, but they still have a bunch of role players and D-League players, and you can't compete with Golden State like that. You can't compete with really anyone in the Western Conference, and a lot of teams in the East now either, with only LaMarcus Aldridge. So I thought that this had potential of going 6 with the Curry injury, but honestly, you could take Klay Thompson off this team and it could still be a short series if you're Golden State. And if you're Golden State, that puts you in a great position where you don't have to... Well, you can rest up. I mean, you can make the argument that they were already tanking towards the end of the season anyway, when they realized they couldn't get the number one seed and they were essentially locked into the number two seed, and they really took the foot off the accelerator. I remember a situation where all four of those guys were out, quote-unquote, injured. They're all-stars, with Curry probably being the only legitimate one. So I think you've got a situation where Golden State wants to win this early. They're desperate to end this early. And there's not a whole lot that San Antonio can do about that. And at this point, I'd be surprised if this isn't a sweep. And that finishes up the games for day one of the playoffs. I'll probably do this again tomorrow because there's 4 more games to cover tomorrow. But once that settles down a little bit, I'll probably go into doing it once every 2 days in terms of the podcast. Thanks for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed the games. Let me know what you thought about the games and if these, the first day of the playoffs have changed your minds on some of the playoff series. If you think now that Philly's going to advance, or if Miami's still got a chance, or if the Pelicans are now going to upset the Trailblazers, for example. Let me know in the comments or send me an email or whatever. Thanks for listening, and take care, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.